Community Matters shares its time slot with the WGTD Radio Theater. And now, here's today's program.
Welcome to Community Matters. I'm your host, Jane Herring. 1 year ago, the unthinkable happened in Kenosha. In reaction to the police shooting of an African-American suspect, protests escalated to riots, resulting in massive destruction, most of which occurred in the already economically challenged uptown area. As we are reminded in this discussion, just weeks before the incident, a fire had also taken out another building, leaving many homeless. My guests today are Jan Michalski, who is the Kenosha 3rd District Alderman, and Brandon Morris, who grew up in the area and works with Building Our Future, associated with a national organization aimed at helping every child succeed in school and life, regardless of race, zip code, or circumstance. Today, we will learn more about how they are involved in this neighborhood, what is currently being addressed, and the challenges for the area, which encompasses the Uptown Business District and the Brass and Lincoln Park neighborhoods. So I think it's helpful, first of all, to find out really the perspective that you're bringing to the Uptown area. So I'm going to start right away with having you kind of introduce yourselves. You know, I've just done your intros, but tell me really how you relate to the neighborhood. Let's start with Jan, first of all.
Yeah, good morning. I'm the alderman in the district, which contains pretty much all of Uptown almost, and I have been for the past 10 years, and I will hopefully continue to be pending redistricting, which is going to happen this year. Anyway, I'm the alderman in the district, and I've been working very hard to try to improve the neighborhood for the past several years, and this is something that I also do. I'm on the City Planning Commission, which a lot of the changes that are going to be happening uptown, et cetera, and in the general neighborhood are directly also controlled by the Planning Commission. Our votes oftentimes then go to the City Council for final approval, but at the Planning Commission, we also deal with a lot of this stuff firsthand. It's where the rubber meets the road and a lot of the changes that are being proposed.
Thanks, Jan. And Brandon, can you tell me a little bit about how you are involved in the Uptown neighborhood?
Well, originally I am from that Lincoln Park Uptown Brass neighborhood, born and raised there, have a lot of ties. Some of my family members still live there. And then also through my job with Building Our Future, I'm the manager of community engagement. And before I joined Building Our Future, they were hosting community conversations up there. And now I'm going into my third year with Building Our Future. So that makes about 4 years in total that we've been able to host community conversations in that neighborhood.
And I'm going to want to know a lot more about the community conversations, and we can talk about that in a little bit. But as we all know, it's 1 year since the riots and destruction of a lot of the business area of Uptown. And I think it's, while I certainly don't want to spend a lot of time looking back, because many have been doing that, obviously, but I would like to get your initial reaction. How did you feel the morning after? Either one of you can respond first. Jan?
Yeah, well, I can only state that it was shock and grief and a profound sadness. The Uptown area has been struggling to rebound economically for years, and then have this event happened is just seemed overwhelming at first, but it was just terrible. And then immediately afterwards, I was stuck on the phone for the whole day. And, you know, and my wife said, well, why don't I go there, help with the cleanup? I said, by all means, this is a good thing to do. I wish I could. But, you know, people were very frightened. People were shocked. People were wanting to know something. And my phone was just ringing off the hook. You know, it's like, it was a horrible experience. And the whole thing was, you know, just, at that time, it felt a little bit overwhelming. As time went by, it's less overwhelming. But at that time, it was just, you know, like, oh my goodness, how much, how bad, what's going on? You know, is there anything else that's going to happen? You know, there were a lot of people in the community and in the city as a whole who were terribly frightened about the whole situation. And there was also, you know, basically wanted to tamp down a bit of the anger at the disruption that was happening, because most of the people that were involved in protesting were, of course, fine people who were just protesting. They had not had anything to do with the with the destruction and with the illegal activity. And unfortunately, a lot of the illegal activity was kind of pushed by people from outside of the city. You know, there were, it's been confirmed to me by the police that they kept on intercepting caravans of cars by the eye, et cetera, heading into Kenosha with their license plates removed or obscured so that they could get in. You know, so basically that tells me that most of the bad actors were, of course, not local at all. But of course, a lot of people locally, you know, there was anger, et cetera. And I, you know, I'm trying to tamp down on that anger toward that, because a lot of the concerns were legitimate. So, you know, like, if somebody protests, that is, of course, their absolute constitutional right. And that's a good thing to do. That's the way to do it. But on the other hand, it was a horrible situation overall. It got out of hand. And but I think most of our people from the community were not involved in that. And of course, you know, I hope my assessment of that remains true. Like I said, I was shocked, saddened, outraged, you know, the whole thing, the whole bunch of emotions involved.
Understandable. Brandon, how about you growing up in the neighborhood and then, of course, with your position?
A lot like Jan, just so many different emotions and mixed emotions throughout. But it was really emotions, since I don't live in the neighborhood currently, it was really mixed emotions about the families, the students and the families that live in that neighborhood. And we had already experienced a terrible fire just 2 weeks prior to this in that uptown area, where businesses were lost. Families had to relocate and be homeless for a while. So right away, my heart was just pulled out of my chest for those folks.
How soon do you feel that it turned from that that fear and sadness to getting things done, you know, both short term and then starting to develop long term goals for recovery?
I think it happened immediately, because a lot of us that grew up in that Lincoln Park Uptown Brass neighborhood and are still living there, that's the way it's always been. It's been that survival mentality, where when tragedy comes, it's always, how do I recover immediately? And usually, yeah, it's just for the short term. So I think innately right away, it was, you're in survival mode and you want to do what's best for you, knowing that if you take care of you, everything and everybody else will be okay.
In complete agreement with Brandon, but at the same time, I agree. The reaction and the response, pretty much the positive response, happened just about immediately. If you went uptown the day after, you would have found many people out there, locals, people from outside of the neighborhood coming in to help clean up, shovel broken glass, you know, take care of the things. You know, there was a lot of reaction immediately to people wanting to help clean up. And this is even prior to people boarding up, you know, buildings around town, you know, but this is immediately people in the neighborhood basically came out with their brooms and shovels and rakes and did what they could to clean off the sidewalks, clean up whatever they could to deal with the situation. I suppose in many respects, it was sort of like a little bit of therapy. I'm doing something. At least I'm getting something done. This is something positive I'm doing. And I think that was an initial reaction for among many people in the surrounding area, but also outside of the neighborhood too. A lot of people came in and helped. There was also they were helping the fire department deal with a lot of the debris and the broken glass and the dangerous situation just from the debris and the broken glass, the aftermath of the fires. There was a lot of people in the uptown area that just said, I'm going to roll up my sleeves and I'm going to do what I can to help.
You know, there's a couple of different ways this could go. When you have that initial reaction where people both in the neighborhood and from outside the neighborhood come in to help and try to recover and to use that therapy. I'm curious, do you feel like that energy has continued over the year as plans are being developed to get the neighborhood functional and back to what it was before, or perhaps even better than it was before? Or was there a lag there where maybe anger took place and then you had to get past that? Just curious, yeah, from your observations.
Brandon, you can go.
So I guess I would have mixed feelings about that. Because when you hear feedback from the community, one, there's two sides to it. Yes, it's good to have folks that don't live there and come back there or come there and kind of help, help out with the neighborhood however they can. I think the issue amongst the community members that live in that neighborhood is we've seen this before. And that means that there have always been folks that come in the neighborhood and do a good thing and then leave the neighborhood and never, shop there, never play in the parks there, never interact with those neighbors. So that's a very sensitive a question for those of us that live there and still live there. The thing that those neighbors would like to see is, yes, is that it's an ongoing thing and it's just a part of what you do. Again, so many times the neighborhood have seen nice things, beautiful things, positive things, hopeful things come to the neighborhood, but so often they leave the neighborhood. And if you ask anybody in that neighborhood who has been there over the last 30 years, the first thing they'll probably mention is the Lincoln Center. They thought that was a great thing for the neighborhood. It was a sense of belonging for a lot of us that lived in that neighborhood. And without any explanation to the neighbors that live there, it was gone. And there's many other examples like that. So I think one of the biggest things that neighbors, community members that live in those neighborhoods, is they appreciate those interactions and folks coming to those neighborhoods and painting those murals and doing different things. But that has to be like a continued effort to where the community is mobilized.
This is very true. And along with that, you got the initial energy, the adrenaline rush, shall I say, involved with the whole incident that was immediate. And, I think people kind of get, after a while, they kind of get worn out and tired of, what's necessary to happen. But at the same time, there has been not enough, perhaps, and certainly perhaps not visible enough, but there have been certain things that have happened to try to deal with the long-term effects, I don't want to talk about compassion fatigue or anything like that. But, there is a situation where people just kind of get tired and lull, like, okay, I'm going to do this. And then they continue on at perhaps a less frenetic level. They want to continue. They want to do it, but not at the same frantic energy level that they started out with. And now, of course, a lot of times this fall off of energy kind of ends up kind of being going by the wayside, and that's unfortunate. The mayor did institute a number of listening sessions. I was at all of them. There are a number of other things that going on that went on, and I will say that basically what we had going on in particular in that neighborhood is that you had a lot of things going on that basically need to be maintained and sustained. Brandon himself is very much involved with the Linkin Park live music concerts have been a wonderful thing for the neighborhood. If you go to them, and I recommend anybody who has, a number of them unfortunately this summer have gotten rained out, but it's a whole different dynamic than any of the other free concerts in this city. It's very integrated. You feel people from the neighborhood being very welcoming to outsiders in the neighborhood going to Linkin Park and enjoying a pleasant evening of music. And that, of course, may sound kind of touchy-feely kind of thing, that it isn't maybe very practical, but it is. When you get people from the whole surrounding area, not just the neighborhood itself, getting them together in a pleasant venue, which is very enjoyable for everybody. When the Mahones kind of instituted these concerts, it's a great feeling there, and it's a great feeling for everybody in the community. At least everybody's mixed up. You get an opportunity to see each other not as the other, but as one of us. Everybody is here together. We're all enjoying the same kind of thing. It's all very pleasant. I've never seen anything untoward happen at any of those concerts. And also, Brandon has those community meetings that he has done for years. And most of them lately have been via Zoom. But, these have been wonderful ways of sustaining the energy to some degree of getting people to, let's see what we can do to make things better. And how can we continue to make things better?
Let's talk about that a little bit. You talked about the listening sessions, Jan, and Brandon, you need to tell us a little bit more about the community conversations. And then I would like to have a little bit of a discussion as to who benefits from either one of those discussion opportunities.
Okay.
So Brandon, tell me about community conversations. From what you told me and what I have understood is that began long before last year's incident.
Yes. So the Linkin Park community conversations probably started around 2018. And again, this is before I was hired by Building Our Future in 2019. In the Linkin Park community conversations, the network's vision is to be a model community that builds partnerships through awareness, trust, and relationships. And that's all to support the success of children and families. And it's community members, it's free, it's open to any community members. And it started off being hosted in a few different locations, like the Boys and Girls Club, Kemper Center, until then it landed a place at Brass Community School's library. Mm. And it happens once a month on the third Thursday of every month. And of course, now we're doing it via Zoom because it's the safest choice. But these conversations are a mix of folks that live in the neighborhood and then community members from all sectors. And again, I told you what the model was, but within these community conversations, community members thought to have goals at the beginning of this year. Mm. And if we want to tie it to the reason why we're on the call, when you're talking about kind of like a year later, I like to focus on what happened in between that, that time. So we met in person because community members from that neighborhood knew that we hosted community conversations every month. And they said, hey, we need you to bring on these community conversations, and we need it as soon as you can, and we need it in person. And we always like to listen to the community and try to meet the needs of the community. So we had an in-person meeting. It was at the Brown Bank building, right uptown. And we brought about 80 community members in person. And what we heard from those community members was they needed to heal together as a community from this tragic time. And they needed to voice their thoughts together. And that was a part of their healing. And then there were a lot of things that just came out of that conversation from, they wanted to build awareness around the elected officials, who they were, and you know, what they represented. And the library, who's a partner of Building Our Future, the library built a beautiful webpage solely for that idea that came from the community members. And I can name more and more, but we only have so much time. But from that September and October in-person meeting, we went back to virtual because we were recommended by the health department. And then moving on into the first of the year, where the community members came out with goals for the year of 2021 that they wanted to accomplish. Those goals led into subcommittees. And those subcommittees were a walking school bus project that was a partnership through the Brass Community School. They wanted to build more awareness around mental health, the access to the resources here in our Kenosha community. And then the vaccination awareness and transportation, just access and education around vaccinations. Another subteam was that Jan is on, was the Lincoln Park activities, things that go on in Lincoln Park. They wanted to be more active as the spring and summer came about. And then they wanted to have Juneteenth back in January. They were already thinking about Juneteenth, a Juneteenth celebration, because they hadn't had one here in Kenosha for a while. And then lastly, the last subteam was the Operation Neighborhood Community subgroup, where it was like the beautification of the uptown Lincoln Park Brass neighborhood. So those subteams all had these goals in mind, and they have been working diligently since the year started. And I think it's just been a beautiful thing and a beautiful way to engage neighbors from the uptown area, as well as the rest of our Kenosha community.
It does sound wonderful. And I'm going to kind of spin back to something that you had said earlier, Brandon, and I hope both of you can comment on this, because I think this is kind of a frustrating thing. The neighborhood has seen attention placed toward it in the past. They've seen some fast hit improvements, and then they get forgotten. You had mentioned that.
Yep.
I'm paraphrasing that correctly. And now they have all these fabulous goals to make some improvements, and they're doing it for themselves. Do you think that's going to be more effective than having people from outside just coming in, swooping in to do some of these types of things? Or is it, well, will they stick with it? Maybe that's the question I'm asking.
Yeah, I guess time will tell. As of right now, I think it has been amazing. And I think it's been both neighborhood folks and folks from throughout our Kenosha community. Again, only time will tell. I wish I had the answer to that.
Yeah, it is a tough one.
Yeah, but I think they have some strategic goals in place where it can continue, where it keeps the energy, the positive energy around folks in the neighborhood. It's continued to build that ownership of the neighborhood. And then they're also trying to have those fun community events that's engaging, where it's always just bringing in hope, ultimately.
Yeah, yes, I agree. The situation also, a situation is, who are the heroes? Are the locals who are actually, have their feet on the ground, or the outsiders who come in, oftentimes with good intentions, but are not really part of the neighborhood, but want to help. The people in the area with the boots on the ground, so to speak, are the ones that are really making things happen. And if it's going to be sustained, it has to be people from the area itself saying, rolling up their sleeves, so to speak, again, and getting things done and maintaining the area and insisting on things moving forward. Looking at, some outsider to come in and be a superhero, is that is not really sustainable. The only way it can be sustainable is if it's somebody, many people from the neighborhood saying, this is our neighborhood, this is where we live, this is what we care about, and this is what we're going to do to make it better for ourselves and everybody else.
We've been talking about some of the, the soft improvements. It's more people improvement and events and seeking resources. But bricks and mortar, a whole lot of that got destroyed. And I know that there are plans to literally rebuild. Can you talk a bit about that? Either one of you, I think maybe Jan, you're a little bit more involved.
Yeah, thank you. Of course, we have had a pretty good relationship with Gorman. They are the ones that renovated the old Heritage House, and now we have the Stella downtown. As chairman of the Historic Preservation, we've had dealings with them. We got that to happen. And they were very, very quick to come in and analyze what they could do. Now, there were literally millions of dollars worth of damage done into the fires. And unfortunately for the business owners or the property owners, their insurance basically covered raising the building and bulldozing it, the rubble, and basically ending up with an empty lot. And that's how much their insurance coverage would cover. So having somebody come in and purchase the property from them and have plans to totally renovate is a big thing. The city council and the city plan commission worked, and we established a new tax incremental district to encompass the immediate area surrounding the uptown. That allows the city to issue bonds, basically loans, to work on infrastructure and help things move along as far as rebuilding. And this does not increase anybody's tax levy when they get their tax bill come January. This is something very, very much, the redevelopment ultimately pays for the tax incremental district bonds. Now, what we have now is a situation where Gorman is coming in. They have bought most of the burned out properties on 22nd Avenue on the west side, and they plan on building basically not only apartments above, but storefronts below, and they have gotten a lot of tax credits to proceed with this. So the tax credits mandate that they have, as far as the apartments, and it's going to be a mix and variety of whether it's one room, three room apartments, three bedroom apartments, and it's going to be a mix. And there's going to be a percentage set aside, subsidized percentage, that are going to be market rate, and the largest group is going to be based on income. So basically, when they go in, the people who basically live in that area and have been unhoused with the various things that are going on in the area will have a place to go, and they will have decent housing. But on the ground level, they also have subsidized storefronts that are going to go in, and of course large amount of retail space is going to be available on the ground level. And this is going to be very attractive for people to go in, because the lease rates are extraordinarily low because of some of their tax credits. They have to do it. Another thing they have to do to get some of their tax credits are put in a grocer. So we already have a the Mexican grocer that was there before is going to come in, but it's going to be greatly expanded into a full-service grocer. And that area has been a food desert ever since Pick and Save closed. And I'm not going to go into the closure of Pick and Save right now because that's a whole long story, and I don't want to bore everybody with what was going on. That was heartbreaking. But there is going to be a full-service grocer right on 22nd, pretty much where the old Century was, and then it was the Salvation Army, and then there was the small church that has that storefront. And it's going to be better in that respect. And I guess the hope will be that once there's enough investment and big investment, we're talking about millions of dollars investment in the uptown area, that that will kind of get other people to get their attention to that particular area as far as an investment opportunity. And so basically, you know, money follows money. And hopefully with that, you know, the Gorman project turns out to be a success, and I'm very hopeful and confident that it will be. I have faith in it. It will basically kind of get other people to look at it and perhaps invest in the area too. There are a lot of other places in the on 22nd Avenue in the immediate area that could certainly use that outlook. I know there's going to be a drugstore is already going in on 22nd Avenue. That area needs a drugstore locally. There's a lot of things that are going on now. Along with that, the city is also, as Brandon has said, used the old Brown National Bank as a meeting place. Well, I've been after the city to purchase that building for years, and they have a slightly different you know, plan on that building than what I envisioned, but it's still a good plan. What they envision is very good. It's going to be basically a training center for youth in the area, but it's also going to provide offices and space and even meeting space for the community as a whole. That is going to happen. There are tax credits that the grants that the city has gotten to move that forward. I'm looking. The mayor has a certain amount of thoughts about what the old Plouse building, Brandon mentioned that got burned down prior to this whole thing last year. And that was a real kick in the gut too. But basically he's thinking about an innovation center going up there. So there's a lot of things that are planned in the city. And of course, people are impatient. People want it to happen right away. Unfortunately, things can't move that quickly, but there are things that are moving and things are moving along. And there's a lot of investment in there. And hopefully that will inspire more investment in that area. I think, as Brandon said, the area has been up and down, has been having a lot of difficulty for several years. But perhaps something like this will inspire other people to look at the Uptown Brass neighborhood and say, this is perhaps a very worthwhile or a very good place to invest our money. And that's the ultimate goal, because the city can't build the neighborhood into prosperity. People have got to invest in the area, and they've got to have faith that their investment will pay off.
So I'm hearing about the investors, and there's the city is involved, of course. And then the third very important leg of that are the people who live there. And Brandon talked quite a bit about that and how some of the things that had been in motion and continue to be even more with the community conversations and the strategic goals that are set.
At the very beginning of the thing where Gorman first came forward, the city and Gorman, and I was there, had open meetings to contact the business owners who have lost their storefronts and in the neighborhood, basically to lay things out and get feedback on what they wanted, what they thought was going to be a good idea, what they thought. So there was a lot of meetings with the area. So there was some, shall we say, community involvement in proceeding with at least the Gorman project. There's been very, very many meetings, and there will be more to come to deal with the old Chrysler project. That, Innovation Center is also involved, and there are a lot of people that have been coming to those meetings to express what they want to see there, what they'd like to see there. So there is, of course, community involvement, so that if you didn't show up at these meetings, and they've all been pretty well publicized, if you didn't show up, I would say you should not complain, because your attitude, your thoughts about how it should go have not been, put forward. Shame on you. You should have come to these meetings and put your ideas forward.
Brandon, what are you hearing?
Well, first of all, I would probably have to disagree with you on this one, Jan, because okay. I think wherever that advertisement or how they got the word out doesn't always reach those folks that live in those neighborhoods, because not everyone has internet, not everyone is on social media, not everyone is on those cities mailing list and so on. So
I accept that, sure.
Yep. So Jane, I'm sorry, can you ask your question again?
Well, sure, and we just have 4 minutes left. Okay. This session, but what I guess I'm trying to figure out, we've all heard the rumblings that people feel the gentrification is in conflict really with what the neighborhood feels it should be. Is that true? What are you hearing?
I think there is a serious concern about that, whether it's the word just needs to be spread about what's happening and what's going to happen, and I guess how the word is spread. So if it's true that it's not going to be any gentrification going on, then I think that word has to be spread to the folks that live there, that work there, that play there.
Go ahead.
Yeah, but there are some serious concerns when it comes to those community members or neighbors or that live in that neighborhood about gentrification. And we've seen it in time and time again in many different cities all across the country. And that is a serious concern for what's to be moving forward here in Kenosha.
I think that concern is very real among a lot of people, but at the same time, gentrification basically means pricing the people who live in the neighborhood out, and replacing and maybe fixing up some things and then raising the rents, etc. That is not really the plan here, because in the at least on the 22nd Avenue, that Gorman project is going to be allow people with low income, etc., or the poor people, to give them a decent place to stay. I think what has prompted a lot of this concern is some of the buildings in the area, the houses in the area, have been raised because of blight. And unfortunately, a lot of these places, they had low rents where a lot of the people lived, but of course they also lived in conditions that nobody should be forced to live in. Some of these buildings were terrible, and absolutely no, I don't care what your income level is, there are certain situations where nobody should be forced to live under those circumstances, and some of those have been gone. There's going to be a lag. Those low income apartments have been are going to be maybe lost, but they're going to be replaced with nice, basically well-maintained apartments that the people with lower income will be able to afford. So basically, the idea here is gentrification is not to move people out of the neighborhood, but give people in the neighborhood a better opportunity and better living conditions than they had.
I'm going to interrupt you here, Jan, because I would like to hear from Brandon, and we have just a few seconds left before we abruptly get cut off. But Brandon, tell me about the communication side of things. Name two things that could be done better in order to really communicate what the plans are with the local residents.
Yeah, so honestly, I don't know, you know, how the communication is getting out to the neighborhoods, but I almost think you might have to go back to old school and go door to door and maybe have a tablet or something with your iPad and just having that one-on-one conversation as far as what they're looking to see or what they're looking to happen. And then actually take out those voices of the people into consideration.
Thank you, Brandon. We've been talking with Brandon Morris of Building Our Future and Community Conversations, and Jan Michalski, who is the alderman of the 3rd District, which encompasses Uptown. I'm Jane Herring. Thanks for listening to Community Matters.
You've been listening to Community Matters. All programs are archived at WGTD.org. Click shows. This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva.